As Omer said, I'm going to be talking about protostellar disks, focusing on finite conductivity effects. Protostellar disks have this interesting property that they're very weakly ionized, and the magnetic diffusivity is very important. What's great about this is that the microphysical source of the diffusivity is relatively simple. It's not some anomalous plasma kind of effect. It's just collisions of charged particles with neutrals. So you can actually make some progress thinking about the diffusivity and what the effects will be. And so what I shall do is show you how you treat the conductivity, motivate the reasons you might be interested in thinking about it, and then present some calculations and discuss some implications. So protostellar disks are poorly conducting. They're high density and cold, so they're neutral. So recombinations are relatively rapid. That keeps the ionization fraction low. And if charged particles drift, they collide with neutrals often. And so you can only get so much current flowing in these things. Not only that, the ionizing sources can only penetrate to a certain depth, cosmic rays to, well, a scale, you know, the absorption length or column is 100 grams per square centimeter, X-rays to a few tens of grams per square centimeter. So here's a not-to-scale cross-section of a protostellar disk. I'm shooting myself here. Oh, okay, got it. Here, so you've got 0.11 10 AU, has characteristic temperatures. And number densities. And once you get within a few astronomical units, ionization doesn't necessarily make it all the way to the midplane from outside, though that really does depend on whether dust grains are present or not, as I'll show. It's only relatively recently been realized that X-rays from the central star, and certainly in low-mass stars, are very important for the ionization in the surface layers of the disk. So here's some calculations from IGEA and Glassgold. And here's the canonical cosmic ray, interstellar cosmic ray ionization rate. And you can see, for example, an AU from the central star for typical numbers, you've got an ionization rate of the disk surface that's five orders of magnitude higher. And so you have to go in quite a distance before that drops down to match the cosmic rays. So just to remind you how you do MHD with finite conductivity, you have this problem, you know, you've got a fluid sloshing around, threaded by a magnetic field. How do things evolve? We've got the continuity equation, we've got a momentum equation with J cross B, some kind of energy equation, and we've got the induction equation that tells us how the magnetic field evolves. And the way MHD works, of course, is I give you a field configuration, you take the curl, that tells you the current. That tells you what the electric field is in the frame of the fluid. You transform back to the lab frame, and that from curl E gives you the evolution of the magnetic field. So that all hinges on relating the current density to the electric field in the frame co-moving with the fluid. And there's a good microphysical model for that in the case of a weakly ionized gas, as I'll show. When you substitute this in, of course, you end up with a tensor inverse conductivity or resistivity, rather than the usual scalar that people like to use. As I mentioned, calculating this is relatively straightforward. So if you imagine you've got a weakly ionized medium, you can see all the neutral particles here in red, and then there's the occasional charged particle here shown in purple. There's a magnetic field. Imagine that there's an electric field. To calculate the resulting current, as long as things aren't changing too quickly, you can ignore inertia and just write down an instantaneous force balance on the charged particle and invert this and add up to solve for the current density, which gives you a messy looking thing. But when everything comes out in the wash, you end up with three different kinds of magnetic diffusivities: the ohmic term, Hall, and amber polar. Okay, so why would you want to think about this in protostellar disks? Well, firstly, the ionization is so low that it's questionable whether the magnetic field can even play with the bulk of the neutral gas. Right, so is the magnetic field coupled to the matter? The criterion for that is straightforward to work out. You just assume you've got a disk in Keplerian rotation, you can estimate the order of magnitude of these terms, compare things, and you just end up comparing eta to the scale height times the sound speed. Which diffusion components dominate? Well, it'll turn out that the answer is it depends. Here's an early estimate from Sarno and Stone in 2002, where they just estimated the ratio of different terms in the induction equation as a function of distance from the central protostar at the midplane of the disk. And what I want you really just to focus on is that the dominant term is the Hall term for the parameters that they use. The consequences of these different diffusion regimes are quite severe, because the induction equation, the diffusivity, is a vector term in the induction equation, and so you can kind of change the topology of how the magnetic field evolves depending on which of those components are important. A severe example of this is if you globally reverse the sign of the magnetic field, that Hall diffusion term does not change sign. The rest of the induction equation does, but not that. So there's a handedness to the fluid that creeps in, which freaked me out the first time I realized this. Just an example of this, here's a linear calculation, just a local linear analysis of the MRI. So up the top here, we've got the usual amber polar ohmic diffusion regime. So this is wave number along here versus growth rate in units of the orbital time. And infinity is flux freezing, and then as you reduce the coupling, you've got 10, 1, 0.1, you can see what happens is the growth rate, as you would expect, becomes less, and you tend to have longer wavelength perturbations because short wavelength stuff is damped out. If you do the same for pure Hall diffusion, you get a very different looking behavior. The maximum growth rate doesn't change as the coupling reduces, and the scaling of what the characteristic wave, how that increases, changes as well. So there's quite severe changes there. This is a very important consideration for launching MHD jets from the surfaces of the disk, because diffusion determines how you load mass onto the field line. And it constrains how the magnetic field can bend across the disk. And also, of course, it determines the radial drift of the field line. So you're not allowed, you can't just arbitrarily kink the field across this thin disk if you have a if the diffusivity is specified by microphysics. If you try and overdo the kinkiness, for example, then diffusion will just tend to straighten up the field. So this is an important consideration if you want a decent boundary condition for a wind model. Now the other wrinkle here is that, you know, this is determined by microphysics and it's very strongly dependent on location within the disk. There's a strong vertical stratification because the shielding of ionization and of course the decrease in density as you go up with height. And there's inconvenient radial variations in the microphysics as well. If you want self-similar, you're not going to get it, right? In fact, if you want steady state, you're probably not going to get it either, unless there's some crazy conspiracy going on. So that's kind of inconvenient. So I've done some calculations of the resistivity tensor. So I've just adopted a minimum solar nebula. Haven't done anything fancy with energy, just assumed isothermal, just to keep things simple. And there's a simple reaction scheme following Nishinokano and Umabayashi, which includes the charging of grains and neutralization on grain surfaces. And that's been significantly extended because of the higher temperatures that you have compared to molecular clouds. You can charge grains up to plus 10 or minus 10, minus 20, and so on. So that's all in there. You have to adopt a model for the grains, and that's kind of fairly uncertain. Are they, you know, how long do the grains stay around? What's their size distribution? That's a strongly evolving thing during the formation of the disk and its subsequent evolution. So firstly, without grains, so this is height above the midplane here on the horizontal axis, and just kind of the fractional ionization, except for this is the ionization rate here. drops down as you go deeper into the disk, and you can see the electron and metal ions are the dominant ions here. And this ionization, it turns out, is sufficient to give you reasonable coupling of the magnetic field to the disk. And that's consistent with the previous simpler estimates, which you can make just order of magnitude estimates quite nicely, just thinking about recombination in the gas phase versus ionization. So if you calculate the resistivities as a function of height based on those particle abundances, you get curves, of course, but the amber polar and Hall diffusivities depend on the magnetic field strength. So you've got this interesting coupling between diffusivity and the strength of the magnetic field, something that's usually not present when you just scribble down an eta in an induction equation. The ohmic thing, which of course if you just scribble down an eta, that's usually what you're thinking, of course, does not depend on magnetic field. So that's the ohmic diffusivity here, there, in black. And then if you look at the lower red and lower blue curves, that's the curves for Hall diffusion and amber polar diffusion for 0.1 Gauss, and then the two higher curves here are for 1 Gauss, to give you some idea of the field scaling. And notice that the Hall diffusivity is dominant over a large cross-section of the disk. And here's the, if the diffusivity is way above here, then you have poor coupling to the magnetic field, so that can become an issue at larger heights. Pardon? Oh, the blue is amber polar diffusion. Yeah, so this one's amber polar diffusion 0.1 Gauss, that's amber polar diffusion 1 Gauss. Right. So you have this dependence on B, so it's nice to just plot out what the dominant diffusion mechanism is. So this is kind of a strange plot, so let me explain it. This is log number density on this side, which maps at 1 AU to a particular height above the midplane. Right? So the midplane's up here, and this is the disk surface down here. And then this is the magnetic field strength. And you can see this nice large region where Hall diffusion dominates. Right? So Hall diffusion is very important. This red line, this danger line here, means that if you're on this side, you're starting to get into the poor coupling regime. Yeah, this is just at 280 degrees, 1 AU, standard solar nebula. Yeah. Now, if you change the temperature, I mean, you can fiddle the mapping between Z over H and density, but changing the temperature doesn't change this plot that much because it affects a few of a recombination rate, but rather delicately. It's only square root temperature dependence. Now, suppose you take a standard single size grain model, 0.1 micron size grains, and throw those in there. Well, electrons can stick to the grains, and ions can stick to the grains. And so that changes things dramatically. So these green curves are the fractional abundances of different charge states of grains. At the surface of the disk, where you've got low density and a lot of ionization, a lot of electrons, you can stick roughly 8 or 9 electrons on a grain on average before Coulomb repulsion stops you sticking any more. And so this is kind of a normal distribution peaked at about a charge state of 8 or 9, something like that. And then as you go to higher densities, you start to drop the fractional ionization and you can't charge the grains up like this. And if you go to even higher densities, you end up with just ±1, ±2, ±3, and neutral is the dominant charge states of the grains. You can see there's this transition region here where the electron and metal abundances plummet, grains take over, and you've got very low conductivity in this region. So of course, if you look at the resistivities, things are more complicated because you've got different kinds of charged species. So these yellow areas are where you've got roughly equal, you know, amber polar and Hall, or ohmic and amber polar, or ohmic Hall and amber polar terms. But you see this red line now where you get lousy conductivity is now a large area. So you certainly near the midplane you tend to kill things, and if you have strong enough field you tend to kill things again. But if we grew the grains to 1 micron arbitrarily, then you've got less grains, so you have higher conductivity. And so you can couple a lot of the disk again. On the other hand, if you throw some small grains in here, you can mess things up again. All right, so what are the effects of this? Well, let's go back to a linear calculation of what the MRI does, this time not local, but take into account the stratification, apply boundary conditions on either end of things. This is some work done by Raquel Salmeron, who was a PhD student with me and is now at Chicago, working with Aria Koenigl. And what you should focus on is, so what you're seeing here is for different, you're seeing the fastest growing mode, assuming a vertical field of the strengths given here, and these are the growth rates in units of the orbital frequency. And as you increase the field strength, eventually there's kind of a maximum around 5 Gauss what grows. But you should just compare, this is the real, if you like, conductivity tensor, and this is what you get if you just assume amber polar diffusion. And you can see you get the big difference between the structure of the modes and the fastest growth rate, particularly for strong fields. So you do get phenomenal changes in what happens in the linear regime. And just here, this just gives you the growth rate as a function of field strength. And Raquel showed that you can get up to a field strength of just above 5 Gauss at 1 AU and still get the MRI to go. I've got time for this. So the MRI is, at least the linear regime, is grossly changed. An interesting effect of the magnetic field dependence, the diffusion coefficients, was illustrated by a simulation by Sano and Stone. This is kind of an unstratified simulation, including the Hall effect when you've got marginal coupling. And this is snapshots of the simulation. This is log magnetic field pressure at different times. And what happens is the field pressure grows and changes the diffusion coefficients to the point that the MRI switches off, and then things decay away to the point that things can start growing again. So you get this time-dependent behavior as a result of the feedback between the magnetic field strength and the diffusion coefficients. All right, so to summarize, first point is resistivity is microphysically determined, and in protostellar disks, apart from not being too sure about the grain size population, at least we know how to calculate this, magnetic activity in protostellar disks is strongly stratified. Hall diffusion is very important, and there's this feedback between field strength and the resistivity, so there's potential for interesting behavior. And I'll finish there.
Questions? I have a question to start off the discussion. Can you speculate as to whether and how jet launching from such disks is different from a highly conducting disk?
Well, if you have an infinitely conducting disk, you cannot launch. You have to inject mass arbitrarily. You can't calculate strike. Or you have to have some heating mechanism that gets... You just can't... It's very hard to build a consistent model without some amount of diffusion. So the diffusion is really an essential part of jet launching because it determines the upward mass flux from the disk surface, relating that to what the field components are at the disk surface, and that's a very important parameter.
Yeah.
If you must. But of course, that's fine, but what are the diffusion coefficients for your turbulence? Right, but my point is that you need to know what those are to... I mean, you can play, you can model with them, that is fine. I've no problem with that. But you need to have a model for them.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So you obviously prefer to be in the regime where the MRI is not acting.
He wasn't asking you, Aria, he was asking me. Well, it's not clear to me you can build, I don't know if you can build, if you can launch anything and have the MRI go. But has anybody shown that?
Not as far as I can see from any of the talks that we've seen today. And oh no, now I'm getting controversial. But we have some other questions? Okay. I'm hoping.
Well, I'm just first of all happy to say that I would continue on that preparation that Mark did, so it's not the end of the day yet, but I have a question. I'm not sure, by the way, that you cannot launch from even if you have perfectly conducting fluid. It just means that you don't have a steady state. And some people mentioned to me, McCammon was Charleston mentioned to me the other day that he thought in gamma ray bursts that could be a situation. We just advect the field in, but you can still launch it. You just don't get a steady state. The question that I had to do on this last point on Sano and Stone, just to remind us of also your opinion. I thought when they did, if I remember correctly, when they did the simulations, they had some. They not only looked at what how it compares with the linear analysis, but what was the condition for setting up a non-linear turbulence that kept going, and they required some more stringent conditions for sustaining turbulence than just starting the linear instability going.
Think,
is that correct?
I think that's generally true for the MRI, is my impression. You need a bit more than just having the linear growth condition met.
Takayoshi is here.
Yeah, where is he?
Yeah, from my calculation, there is a nonlinear constraint to sustain the MRI, which is determined by the ohmic dissipation, size of the ohmic dissipation, and only not it is not depend on the whole effect, and that is usually the magnetic Reynolds number should be less than unity by my definition. But magnetic Reynolds number of my definition is the characteristic velocity is the apparent speed, and the characteristic length scale is the MRI characteristic, the most unstable wavelengths of the MRI. And yeah,
there's a factor of Alphane speed over sound speed extra compared to what I was using in the field.
Yeah. That is the result from my calculation.
But this, the comparing things to sound speed times the disk thickness h is the right, certainly the right thing to do for MHD wind launching. I mean, that's sufficient coupling. So it might be too low to drive MRI, but it's okay because you've basically got larger scale structure stuff.
You refer here to Hall diffusion of B. The various terms in the generalized Ohm's law don't necessarily cause breaking of field lines. Could you show your generalized Ohm's law again, just so I can keep straight what's going on?
So this wasn't the quickest way of doing it, but there we go.
The other two all means it's frozen to the electrons, but I mean all of them are
frozen to both.
You have a redistribution of the field. In the case of the polar diffusion, the ions move in the neutral from the electron to the electron. The field is always quite the electron. In the case of the hole, the thing that is really effect is the relative drift of ions and photons, or ions and electrons, and
it frozen to the electrons, and the ions are like,
yeah.
In that case.
But calling it a diffusion is a somewhat confusing thing, because there's no breaking of flux.
And the polar diffusion still involves dissipation of magnetic energy, but the field is frozen into the charged component of magnetic energy. It's joule heating. It's J dot. The J dot E is still non-zero. In the case of Hall, J dot E is zero, so there is no energy release, energy dissipation. But you get a redistribution of the field because the electrons and the travel separately, and the ions and are traveling relative to each other, and so you get the field redistribution.
I don't know what you mean by field redistribution.
Meaning that you can carry the field relative to the bulk of the fluid. They are not moving together. You get diffusivity effects.
You can't break field.
It's not that you break it, it's just that it's tied to one component which doesn't go with the bulk of the fluid.
Yeah, it still doesn't allow you to reconnect.
No, there's no reconnection in any of this.
So it's your definition of diffusion is...
The ohmic term could, in principle, destroy the field and could be part of the connection, yes.
Now that those semantics have been cleared up, are there any other questions for this speaker? Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so facetious in my comments.
No, because we just had a comment that what really matters
yes.
is the real magnetic resonance. The one based on ohmic,
yeah.
the threshold of peak. Is that true? I mean, I didn't
follow up. You were.
Is it the. It, what matters for the threshold of the MRI is the real ohmic magnetic Reynolds number and not the Hall term or the ambipolar.
Well,
diffusion.
The ambipolar matters, though, doesn't it? But we don't know.
If he gets one more, can I get one more?
Yes.
I'll just watch.
Well, he's had two already, and you've only had one. So.
This is his third.
Since we keep saying the same word again, it's not really what you are calling magnetic Reynolds number. You really mean the Lundquist number. I don't want to really be too much, because it's the Alphen speed that you are dealing, not the relative velocity.
Oh, I hate these numbers. Are there any other? Steve, would you like a rejoinder? But if you're going to talk about Lundquist numbers, I'm not. Okay. Good.
I don't know any names of any other.
Yes.
I just wanted to. Comment that I'm a little bit less optimistic than you are about the possibility of actually calculating the charge state of the disk, because the grain size distribution, as you mentioned, is not known and probably evolves. The even in the absence of grains, there has been some controversy about the recombination rate. You know, where the positive charges wind up. Is it radiative recombination? Or dissociative recombination that dominates, and then on the ionization side, it's not clear how the cosmic rays might be transported to the surface of the disk.
Oh, true, but you can play around with those things and see what happens, as usual.